on Yud Daled Amud Beis at the Mishnah. Actually, I'm sorry. No, we had one bit before the Mishnah that we didn't get to. That's right. The story involving Rav Papi. Can't skip this story. Remember that we had said that you're not allowed to make groats, which are cracked grain, right, for porridge on Yom Tov. You're not allowed to use a mortar on Yom Tov. We explained that to mean you're not allowed to make groats because you're not allowed to use a mortar. And we had a couple of different takes on how to understand this brisa. We had Abaye's approach, we had Rava's approach, and that brought us to the story of Rav Papi, the end of the top line on Yadalad Amid Beis. It's a fascinating story, very worth seeing here. Rav Papi Ikla LeBeimar Shmuel. Rav Papi went to the house of Shmuel, and here it's the actual house. Sometimes Bay is yeshiva, but it's not here. He went to the house of Shmuel. I see le daisa. Shmuel brings out daisa for him, this porridge made out of the groats. Veloacha, and he refused to eat the porridge. Why does he? It is on Yom Tov indeed, and he refuses to eat the porridge because he assumes it's been ground inappropriately on Yom Tov in Shmuel's house. So the Gemara asks, "V'delo b'machtesha katana avdua." Maybe they did it in a small mortar. Remember, we said that that's allowed. That was part of the discussion that we had 2 weeks ago. No, the chazi dahava dayik tfe. He saw that it was very fine, so he said this must have been ground up with a large mortar. You can't do that with a small mortar. V'dilma mi de es small avdua. So maybe they made an erhiantif. The chazi dahava kalif tsihare. No, because he saw that it was very shiny. Rashi says, Sohar Mariso, Sohar like Tzoratas Elateva, the glow, the light of its appearance, had Kalub Vilavan. It looked like it had just been stripped, and it was white. It was very shiny. So that sort of thing, you know, yeah, there's oxidation. If you, as those of us who make groats know, there'll be oxidation if you peeled it yesterday. You left it for today. So that's how he knew. The Bayisema, alternatively, Sha'ani Beimar Shmuel Di'ika Pritzusa De'Avdi. Alternatively, the household of Shmuel was different because he knew they had Avadim, they had slaves working there, and they weren't careful with the law. They were very loose with it. So, therefore, Papi refuses the porridge at the house. We have it as Rav Papi. If you take a look at Source Aleph, they had Rav Papa as the addition in the Ritva. But the Ritva asks questions that you have to ask regarding this story. What questions did the story raise?
Well, one question is, if he assumed the goyim made it, wouldn't this be the show also?
The Jew lit the thing, whatever.
Well, where was Shmuel?
So one question is, what happened to trusting Shmuel? Right? Doesn't Shmuel have a cheskes kashrus? That's one question. Question number two is...
Does it say Shmuel was home?
Yeah, it says Shmuel brought it out from him. I see.
Shmuel actually brought it out.
Yeah, oh, I see so would be Shmuel yeah, brought it
so
out.
What does it matter who prepared it if Shmuel brought it out?
But not to mention, if this is being done wrong, what is Shmuel doing? Hiring Avadim who are going to make this inappropriately on Yom Tov. What in the world happened in this story? Not to mention, as the Ritva is going to ask actually first, we know the Gemara says Shabbos Lamaches and Aleph that if a Jew does something inappropriate b'shogeg on Shabbos, other Jews are allowed to benefit. The Jew did something by accident, didn't know that it was usur, so other Jews are allowed to benefit. So he should be allowed to benefit from this, unless he's going to assume that it was done intentionally. So look at the Ritva.
The Gemara says the conclusion he came to wasn't that Chasar Shalom Shmuel did this by accident. It was his. Some of us have done it for him.
Right. When he says Avadim, I don't think he means Eved Kanani, because if it's an Eved Kanani, there's a whole different parasha altogether. He's not Jewish. But I think he's talking about a Jew who worked in the house and who was not careful. Even though we said the Avadim are not careful, and I would be hard-pressed in truth to think that it's a Jew that we say wouldn't be careful, I think you have to say that. So take a look at Source Aleph. Rav Papa equal to Beimar Shmuel Isle Daisa Belochel Perish Lefisha Yachoshesh Shekachuhu Hayom Shalokedin. He was worried that it had been ground up that day, which is not halachically permissible. And it appears that he was strict on himself. Because if this was letter of the law, the rule is, even if he cooks intentionally on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, we follow Rabbi Meir, who says other people are allowed to eat it that day. We're not concerned they're going to ask him to do it on their behalf. So he says even b'mezid, even intentionally, it should be mutter. So he was just being strict. That's point number one. But then he continues, Shani Beimar Shmuel Deika Pritzusa Deavdi, the Avadim are careless, perish. Halav Hachi, meaning if not for the Avadim, Misfeka Leslo Nachzuke Isura. If you're not sure, you don't assume that things are not being done right. V'chol Yisrael V'chezkas Ksherim. He says all Jews are assumed to be kosher. We assume that they do things right. We don't assume that they do things wrong. So in other words, you go into Shmuel's house, you assume that things are okay, even if you see that it hasn't been peeled and all that. Apparently that would not ruin the chazakah. What ruined the chazakah for him was the avadim.
Why didn't he ask?
Because avadim don't have a chazakah.
Shmuel brought it up. Why didn't he ask him?
Maybe he thought it would offend.
Well, he's not offending just by not eating.
He doesn't like groats. I don't like
something
groats.
Else.
So how can you use avadim?
The Michael Behema, you know.
Well, that's the other, we have to get to that question. Sorry.
I said maybe it was, you know, part of Michael Behema. He didn't like it.
But that's his statement here is, the fact that you saw evidence that made you think this isn't kosher isn't enough to ruin the chazakah. If it's Shmuel, you would have to be done like Avzachos, you would have to assume the best and not worry about the evidence that you saw. However, because you know not everything is being done by Shmuel, because he has Avadim, therefore you have to question. That's the way that the Ritva understands it.
Would you think Shmuel would watch?
Shmuel would have allowed them to come out and bring it out. Shmuel bar on himself, according to the Gemara.
Yeah.
So the Ritva is not satisfactory.
It's definitely difficult. But then he asks his third question. He says, Utamia Milsa. He says, this is very surprising, like Alan just asked. Mar Shmuel Gufei, Shmuel himself, the Gavarabo, he's a great man. Heichi Meshamish Ba'avdi Prisi, how is it that he can use such undisciplined avadim? V'iyunami Heichilo Chayishla, why wasn't he worried? V'yishlomar Tilamar Shmuel Vedukin Hayulo. So he says, no, Shmuel knew they were fine. The Apagav, the Pritzi Nino Bamili de Alma, granted that they were careless about other things in general, the lo mezasli be isure. They would not take these isurim lightly. So Shmuel, for himself, knows that they're okay. The Rav Papa, the lo avu bedukin etzlo, but Rav Papa doesn't know them from anybody. So Chashash, he was concerned. The Hechmer al Asma lifnim mishur azadin. So he was strict. Again, it's beyond the letter of the law, because technically, even if they did it wrong, he's still allowed to have it. Velo hayarot alismoch amar Shmuel. He didn't want to depend on Shmuel. Came into Mar Shmuel gufei lo kimle v'milsa shaber. Because Shmuel himself, doesn't necessarily. Lo kimle v'milsa. Why not? Did we see Shmuel earlier in the sugya? I don't think so. He seems to be saying that there was an issue with Shmuel's shita in general, but I don't actually see anything, unless he just means the fact that he had this evidence that they had done it inappropriately. I'm not sure what he's doing with those last words, unless he's referring to something he's already established earlier in the sugya before the part that I excerpted. But what I wanted you to see is a very big issue, which really we could spend an entire shiur on, and maybe I should have actually just taken the shiur on this point, the point that he's making here, which is personal knowledge. In other words, normally we have a very clear halachic standard for who I can trust when it comes to kashrus and various other issues, but kashrus is where it comes up a lot. The standard is the person someone who's careful of his house, and is it a person who is knowledgeable in the issues at hand? So in other words, if I know in general he's Shomer Shabbos, he meets the standard of observance, but he doesn't know about the latest discovery about fill-in-the-blank item, So he doesn't have a chazaka that he's going to be doing it, right? Because he doesn't know. The information isn't there. If a guy has all the information, but he flouts halacha, so then again, having the information doesn't help. He has no chazaka. But if he's somebody who's up on what's going on, and he's somebody who's generally careful, that's all I need to know, and he has a chazaka, and we're good. What the Ritva is introducing for Shmuel is a very interesting idea, which does have other sources supporting it, which is, I think I mentioned it even in the Avodah Zarah share at some point a couple of years ago, the idea that sometimes you can have personal knowledge of someone and know that they're kosher, even though they're not Shomer Mitzvahs. The Avodah that he has are people who are known to take things lightly. However, he knows them and he says, I know they're not going to feed me treif. I know that they're going to be careful about what they're doing in my kitchen.
Remember,
and that's
were they
good
employed
enough.
By him?
They are employed by him.
Okay, so then,
but it's good enough
add,
for...
He could worry that they would get fired if they
didn't know. But the point is, Shmuel is able to say that for himself. That doesn't mean your papa is going to accept it. But Shmuel is able to do it. This comes up a lot for people who have family who want to host them. And the family members are not from, but they say, we're going to be careful because it's you and because we want you to be able to eat in our house. We won't do this, we won't do that, we'll do it all properly. And you go over to the house and you'll eat there because you know them. If someone out in a vacuum were to ask you, can I trust these people? You wouldn't be able to extend your knowledge of them to now give them a cheskes kashrus for the world. But for you, that's actually legitimate. We have chuvos like this supporting.
What evidence do you have these avodim are from?
We don't. We don't know that they're from at all.
You don't even know if they're Jewish.
Well, they have to be Jewish,
what?
Or else this issue wouldn't be coming up because they could. We could say they made the parish for themselves, and along the way, the Jew is able to benefit from it.
The word is also very strange. Partusa.
Partusa. Why?
Partus getter.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the intent?
Mm-hmm.
So partus getter. They're clearly not from.
That's the first.
Yeah, but Rachel saying that there were poets in one area they could be lax, in another area they could be trusted if you have personal knowledge.
Sounds very universal for us, though.
It's a
different word that you say. They don't know this particular halacha.
No. Pritzusa doesn't mean lack of knowledge.
They don't care.
Pritzusa means we don't care. They are lawless. That's Pritzusa. I think that's a very important point to be cognizant of. This idea that Shmuel is able to say, I know them and therefore it's okay, even though they're not Shomer Mitzvos. But I know that they're not going to give me an Isra.
It sounds like there's a chazaka in effect, though.
Oh, a personal
chazaka. To be disproven about a bottom.
Yes. And that's true. There is a chazaka like that about a bottom. That's the Gemara giving you point blank. Absolutely. We had the same thing 2 weeks ago when we had the halan v'halahu between Babel and Eretz Yisrael, and we said that in Eretz Yisrael there's a concern because of the Avadim. That's through the Gemara. There's always that the reputation of the Eved. And again, here I don't believe that these are true Avadim. I think they're just workers. But nonetheless, the sense of they're not careful. Unless you wanted to say that what you were talking about was an Eved Kenani, but the Eved Kenani made it just for the guests, and therefore you'd have the concern that he did Malacha for you.
Is he a Jew?
Yom
Kenani in some way?
Not as far as Yisrael Malacha.
How did he get around this Gemara?
How does who get around the Gemara?
How did he get around this Gemara when it comes to a Budden then?
In terms of what? No, the answer is they wouldn't have nemanas for people.
So you can't use the butter.
Well, you can, and but you're going to have to watch. You have to be mashgiach.
You have to call for it.
But is that enough? I mean, we're not Shmuel. What about Shmuel?
Oh, that's another interesting aspect, actually. Right? The Ritva doesn't say Shmuel had a mashgiach in the kitchen.
Right.
Shmuel knew. The Ritva does not assume that there's somebody watching them.
Well, who's going to trust my Eved? If I say, I know this Eved,
No, but for Shmuel himself.
For Shmuel, yeah.
Would you have the fear of Shmuel? I mean, I thought there's always the fear of the boss.
No, not always. I mean, there is a given that people are worried about losing their livelihood.
Too bad we don't have Steinsaltz here. You see, where he brings down the halacha.
Well, this is a lot of this is the Ritva expanding from the case in general. Mm-hmm. Okay, but that was just the last piece from there. The Gemara then gives us a Mishnah about Borer on Yom Tov, which is really a quick piece, and then it moves into the issue of Shalach Manos, but not the Shalach Manos you're thinking of. But the Mishnah says, HaBorer Kidneyos B'Yom Tov. Let's say you are separating beans on Yom Tov. What you mean by that is separating them from their inedible pods that they were in. So Beishamai Omrim Borer Ochel V'Ochel. So Beishamai says, what do? Take the food and eat the food and leave the pods behind. Right? Standard. Ubeishel Omrim Borer Kedarko. Beishel says, no. This is Yom Tov. This isn't Shabbos. So he says, do it normally, Becheiko, in your lap. Bikanon uvetamkoi, with a kanon funnel. We saw this kanon on Yud Beis Amud Beis, and Rashi there explained it was a funnel. Uvetamkoi, or with a big dish. Avalo betava, avalo betavla, avalo benafa, avalo bekvara. But not using a tabla, you know, a tablet, not one of those tablets, no. But a flat, big flat surface, not with a sifter, that we don't want you to use. The Tiferes Yisrael offers two reasons why Beis Hillel has this restriction. What would you suggest?
Like more close to the shopping spot, something like that. You're sieving and stuff like that, which is not a right? You're separating them.
But if it's mutar on yantav, it's mutar on yantav.
It's not large volumes and large quantities are not mutar on yantav.
Right. So the Tiferes Yisrael's first approach is that these kelim, the tabla, nafa, the kvara, indicate that you're using a lot. You're processing a lot of the material, and it looks like you're preparing for tomorrow. That's one. The other approach that he has, maybe this is what Gerard actually was saying, is that these kelim are kelim which will be usher midil raisa on Shabbos. These will be biblically prohibited for sifting on Shabbos. And since you could have done this on Erev Yantif, therefore we're saying midir rabbanan, don't use these on Yantif. Even though borer is fine, you really should have done this before Yantif, so at least we're going to ban use of hardcore sifting equipment. That's what we're going to say not to use. That's Beis Hillel. And Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Af Mediach V'Shole. Rabbi Gamliel says, you know what you can do? You could even, Mediach usually means to rinse in water, but here it's clearly more than rinsing. You're able to submerge them in water and Shole to fish out the psoles, the parts you don't want, which is an extreme act of Boer. Right, you're separating what you don't want from what you do want, and Rabbi Gamliel says that's fine. So the Gemara is fascinated by this position of Rabbi Gamliel, and it wants to know what exactly it is that Rabbi Gamliel was adding here. Tanya, Braisa says it should say not Amar Rabbi Gamliel, but Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. It's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel speaking. He says Bamed Devarim Amurim. He says, when is this true? What is this Mishnah talking about? Kesha ochel maruba al hapsolas. It's talking about where you have more good than bad. You have a lot of beans that you want, and then there's some pods that are mixed in. Al hapsolas maruba al ochel. But if there is more pod than there is bean, divrei akol notel es haochel leminiachas hapsolas. Then everybody agrees. You take the food, and you leave behind the pods. Why? If there's more dross than there is good, you take the good and leave the dross behind. Why is that?
Less jerkin, no?
Less strain, right? We don't want you straining on Yantav. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, wait. Psolas rubala ochel mi'ika mandashari. If there's more psolas, then the whole thing is off limits. No one would permit it. Rashi explains why. Because if there's more bad than there is good, then the whole thing is considered bad. The good parts, the edible parts, are batel. They're nullified to the good parts. So the Gemara answers, Lo, Sricha, did nafish betircha vizuter b'shiura. So he says, no, it's not that there's more psoles by volume. There's more psoles in terms of work. It'll take you more time, and there's more strain involved. By volume, there's more good. But if you were to fish out the psoles, if you were to take out the psoles, there would be more strain in removing that. That's what he's getting at. I don't know. The problem is I'm having a hard time imagining the beans and the pods to figure out why there should be more strain. Usually, removing the lesser volume item when they're both dry solids, removing whatever is lesser is easier than removing whatever is more. So I'm not clear on why this should be such a thing, unless the answer is that the way you remove it is like by pouring it out or something and then holding back whatever is, you know, the pod. So maybe pouring out beans and holding back the pods is an easier way. I don't know. Okay. But then we get to what they did in Rabbi Gamliel's household. Rabbi Gamliel, Omer af mediach v'sholem. Tanya, Brisa says, Omer Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok reports, Kaf hayim in hagan shal beis Rabbi Gamliel. This is what Rabbi Gamliel's household did. Shayu mevien deli malay adashim. They would bring a pail filled with lentils. Umatsif in olav mayim. They would then flood it with water. V'nimtza ochel lamato, psalas lamala, and now there's food below. And the dross floats to the top. That's what you would, do. Is you would flood it, and then the psoles would actually float over on the top. Just wanted to see what I had. Okay. So according to this,
it doesn't tell you which one was more, which one was less.
No, I'm bothered by something.
But not told of.
No, I see why. Because look what the Gemara asks next. The Gemara says, "Vatanya ibcha." Don't we have a brisa that says the opposite, meaning that the dross would be always on the bottom and the good stuff is afloat into the top? So he answers, lo kasha, that's no problem. It depends on what the bad stuff is. Ha be'afra, ha be'gili. It depends if you're dealing with dirt or you're dealing with chaff. Right? If you're dealing with dirt, dirt's sinking to the bottom. It's not floating on the top. Your beans might float. The dirt's not floating. But when you're dealing with chaff, so chaff will float, it's light. And that will float to the top, and you're removed from the top. So it depends on really on what your case is. That will determine which it is that you're fishing out. But the upshot of this discussion is that the borer of food, according to Beis Hillel, is indeed permitted on Yom Tov. He's good with that idea. He wants you to take the ochel out and eat it. That we had from Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel actually didn't specify that, but either way, the Gemara clarifies that where there's more work involved in taking the ochel than take the psoles out. That's what he's saying. Okay, I really wanted to get to this the Shalach Manos piece, so let's launch into that. So here, it's not talking about sending food on Purim. It's talking about sending food on Yom Tov. The term Manos just means portions. And the issue here is sending food to somebody else on Yom Tov. Nothing to do with Eruv and Hotzah, not a carrying discussion, but an issue of preparing for after Yom Tov and an issue of appearances. That's our concern. And potentially relevant when people go to somebody's house and they bring a gift for them to use. So well, is it usable for that? Is it usable for Yom Tov? Is the question. So this is our Mishnah. Beis Shammai Omrim, we're in the middle of the page, at Daled Amud Beis 14b. Beis Shammai Omrim, ein mishalchen b'Yom Tov ela manos. Beis Shammai says the only thing you can send on Yom Tov is manos. What does manos mean? So if you take a look at Rashi, and this will remind you of Mishloach Manos for Purim. He says, Davar Hamuchan, something that is ready, Ve'eno asur lanicho lamachar, not something that people would normally leave for the next day. Kigon chatichos basar, chatuchos lefnei ha'orchem, like pieces of meat that are already cut up in front of the guests, lefnei dagim or fish, something that is ready to use. And reminiscent, when we say for Shalach Manos, you're supposed to give people something that they can use. So, ready to use food, Beis Shammai says. U Beis Hillel Omrim, Beis Hillel says no. Mishalchen behema chayavot. You can send him whole animals, whole birds. Bein chayim bein shchutin, alive or shechted, doesn't make a difference. Go for it. That's what he.
Not on
Yom Kippur. So, the it's interesting, you know, regarding this issue of bringing an animal. Why does Beis Shammai not want you to bring a whole animal? So I think, right, so part of it has to be a tircha element. Part of it is it usable at all? But part of it is the strain. You're supposed to give him pieces that are all cut up. There won't be any strain involved. So take a look on your sheet at source B's, please. Source B's is the Yishalmi's question regarding this topic. The kasha al de Beis Shammai. They ask a question of Beis Shammai's position. Beis Shammai, who says, I want you to send portions, right? Yerech gedola mutar l'shalcha. Gedi katan asr l'shalcha. Oh, you've drawn your line in an odd way. You drew the line between whole things and portions, but maybe you should draw the line between small and big. Because otherwise, according to you, I can't send a small goat, but I am allowed to send a very large thigh from a monster-sized animal. There's more strain involved in that.
But the presumption is the small goat is going to be, or could be, shafted?
Yes, it's yontif.
But to shaft, you have to presume that someone has a knife.
Yeah.
Presume a whole bunch of things.
Or they can take it to the shochet, but yes.
Isn't it Musa?
Yontif.
For the party that's getting it, because they weren't... They didn't prepare it.
Can you? They didn't need to prepare it. Right. So we didn't get to the discussion about items which need to be prepared and what if it was in the muktzah outside and so on and so forth. But here it's been prepared. It was understood as a Yom Tov eligible, Yom Tov ready entity.
Because somebody else set it aside.
Yeah. And because it's an animal that should be useful. But the Yerushalmi doesn't answer this question. It leaves it as a question on Beis Shammai. It then moves into a second point. It distinguishes between carrying them and leading them. Amar miyudin lo mistabra bitoano. Avalam haya moshcho v'holech. Mabin moshcho l'holicho. Mabin moshcho l'hashkoso. This only makes sense regarding... this only makes sense... Well... There are two ways you can read this Yerushalmi. You can really get away with reading this either way. One way to read this is that it's a statement about Beis Hillel. And what it's saying is that when Beis Hillel says you're allowed to bring a live animal, it doesn't make sense if you're carrying it. That's too big a strain. Lo mistabra b'toano. It doesn't make sense if you're carrying it. Avon ha'emoshel v'holeh. But if you're walking it... So, good. What's the difference? You have to walk the animal to give it something to drink. So what's the difference between that and walking the animal to somebody's house for, as a gift for the Yom Tov meal? It doesn't make a difference. That's one way to take it. The other way to take it is that it's talking about Beis Shammai and where does Beis Shammai prohibit. And saying Beis Shammai only prohibits b'toano if you're carrying the live animal. But leading it, Beis Shammai would permit. And then Beis Hillel actually permits even both ways, even whether you're carrying it or not. So the question is how you read that line in the Yerushalmi. If you take it the first way, Beis Hillel only permits leading a live animal, and Beis Shammai permits neither. If you take it the second way, Beis Hillel permits both.
Why would Beis Shammai not allow you to lead an animal?
Because he'll say that's strain also. Because he has to, if he's disagreeing with Beis Hillel. And Beis Hillel is only permitting it in the case of leading it. Beis Shammai must prohibit.
We see how through Masechta Shabbos said that you're allowed to.
Yeah, but he won't let you
as a gift. You're allowed to lead animals, yes, they're not.
But as a gift, he isn't allowing it. Well,
the latter makes more sense that Beis Shammai.
Maybe he'll argue it's because he may argue it's about tircha on the other end because it's not ready to use.
To lead a goat is not really tircha. I mean, maybe. I've seen some people walk their dog as a big tircha because the dog schleps them.
Especially winter time at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm going hush come out there. There's a blizzard.
So my bang, I guess you don't want to. The dog. It's time about time to keep them in the house.
Exactly.
So
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, there are two ways that you could really take that Yerushalmi. Okay. But that's in terms of sending the portions, and sending pieces. We're going to come back to that in the Gemara, but the Mishnah has a second half. Mishalchin yenos shmanim uslasos vikitnios. Kitnios doesn't appear in the Yerushalmi version, presumably because it was Pesach. The Tanakhama says, you are allowed to send bottles of wine, you're allowed to send bottles of oil, you're allowed to send flour, the beans, avolo tevua, but not raw grain. That's not allowed. And the reason why it's not allowed, Rashi says, is because you're not allowed to grind it on Yom Tov. And it should have been ground up yesterday. So therefore, you can't send him raw grain. Rabbi Shimon matir b'tevua, and Rabbi Shimon says, no, you're allowed to send tevua, you're allowed to send raw grain as well.
Can you winnow it on Yom Tov?
No, winnowing would also be a problem.
But you can chew raw grain, right? Some people chew.
Well, we have the melilo where you take the kernels and the like. But there are actually three different approaches to what this machlokes is about. Three different takes. Rashi gives us one. If you take a look at Rashi on the Mishnah, Rashi on Avoloes Atavua, he says, She'ena ru'uya hayom. Like I said, when we read the Mishnah, it's not suitable for use today. That's Rashi's understanding. She'en tovun b'yom tov. You can't grind it on yom tov. Shayelo litchon me esmol. It should have been ground up yesterday. V'lo tafik taima. It's not going to lose its taste if you grind it up the day before. Rabbi Shimon matir b'tevua, and Rabbi Shimon permits with grain. Why? Shema yivashlein v'kedera v'yichteshem b'machtesh es ketana. Because you could always boil it up in the pot, and you could then grind it up in the small, the small crusher, the small mortar, and therefore it's okay. So as Rashi understands that the issue is preparation for after Yom Tov. The Sfasemis objects to Rashi's read. Because first of all, when the Gemara is going to address this, they're going to talk about what Rabbi Shimon will permit, and they're not going to mention the soaking approach. That's number one. Number two, Rabbi Shimon is in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Shimon is Israeli. Rabbi Shimon's stam is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He's Israeli. He's living in Meron.
And all these guys Israeli?
What does that mean?
In the Mishnah?
Well, Tanoim in general are yes. So Rabbi Shimon is Israeli. Well, we said that Halan v'Halahu line 2 weeks ago from the top line on Yadalat on the base, and we said in Israel they don't allow the small grinder. So that's out. So the Sfasemis says that's not what's going on. I brought you the Sfasemis in Source Gimel. He says, Mashma de'ikar time of the Tanakama, de'kevan de'al pirov lomis achil b'yom tov, asur l'shloach. He says the issue isn't the problem is not the whether he's allowed to use it that day, but he's not going to. You can't bring someone something on Yom Tov straining to do so if really what you're doing is preparing for the next day because he's not going to use it that day. Bring him raw grain. Who in the world? You show up at my at my house after shul, and you say, here, we brought you some grain. Like, we're going to now process it and wait to eat lunch?
Some grapes of Sankidish.
Yeah. Basically. So the Sfasemis says that's the objection of the Tanakh.
You don't trust your kashrus.
Right.
So why does Rav Shimon hold it's okay?
Right, so Rabbi Shimon apparently would, according to this, we have to see the Gemara, what the Gemara is going to do with Rabbi Shimon, but Rabbi Shimon is going to say, essentially, well, there are things that people make with it that day. Well, that's the answer he's going to give.
Some say based on the Roim, and therefore you don't send it.
The Bala Itur gives a third approach. The Bala Itur Rishon is quoted in the Rosh, and that's, I brought it from where it's in the Rosh. He bases his approach on a Yerushalmi. It's Source Dalet, but I'm going to say it outside. Because there's a lot that I wanted to make sure to get to. The Bala Iter says, as seen in the Yerushalmi, it's about the issue of animal food and ochel nefesh. That's really what we're talking about. That's our concern. There's a Gemara that you're going to see on Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, which is going to have a discussion about whether the heter for ochel nefesh, preparing food on Yom Tov, does that apply to preparing food for your animals? That's a machlokas over there in the Gemara and Daf Chaf Aleph. And based on the way the Yerushalmi reads our discussion, Rabbi Shimon takes the view of Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva's view is you can eat, you prepare food for animals also. Ochel nefesh includes food for your animals. So Rabbi Shimon will permit for an animal. Whereas the Tanakhama does not. The Tanakhama is going to follow Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And so what he says is that the machlokas in our Mishnah is because the grain is usable as fodder for the animals. So Tanakhama says that's no good. I'm not allowed to prepare fodder on Yom Tov for the animals. It has to be from before Yom Tov. Whereas Rabbi Shimon's take is, I am allowed to prepare the fodder for them on Yom Tov. So that's the machlokes, as the Bala Itter reads it, three different ways to take the Mishnah. In practice, the Shulchan Aruch takes the view of Rashi, that the issue really is the issue of grinding. I brought it for you here in Source Hay. He says, Mutter l'shloach l'chaveru b'yom tov behem achaya v'ov afilu chayim. You're allowed to send your friend beasts, birds, you know, even if they're alive, you can do it. Yeno shmanim slasas kidneyos, you can send the wine, the oil, whatever. Avolo tevua, but not grain, l'fisha mechuseres tachina. He says explicitly, as Rashi did, it is lacking in grinding, it needs to be ground up. Shehi malacha asur b'yom tov, that malacha is off limits on Yom Tov. The Mishnah Brura explains on that, you know, it is usable without grinding, but there's an issue of appearances. He says in source Vav, he says you could make you singe the kernels, you know, and eat them that way. You could make some cooked food out of it. The Gemara is going to mention some options. Since that's what you do with wheat normally, is wheat gets ground up. Utchina asur b'yom tov, but you're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov. Nira beholachaso shehu letzarech chol. It looks like you're doing it for a weekday. Umechzi kemisasek b'yom tov letzarech chol. It looks like you are preparing for chol ve'asur, and therefore you're not allowed to do it. That's what the take of the Mishnah Brura is on it, is that we are concerned not only that it's meant for grinding up, but that even if it's not going to be used that way, that's the way it looks. That's his argument. So,
Aren't you doing that in your house?
Sorry?
Aren't you doing that in your house?
In your house, you
well,
are...
Where's your Gemara
sign? In your house, you're saying if I were to use my wheat that I have at home.
Well, most people are basically the effort.
We're not talking about that wheat. We're talking about someone coming over with that wheat. It looks like almost like it might be...
No, you know what the answer will be? We say Maris Ayin is prohibited b'chadre chadarim, right? In rooms within rooms. That was the Gemara earlier, based on that test. But we drew a distinction between Deoraisas and Derabanans. And we actually had two ways to read it. There was a run that we saw on this. In which we said either one way to take it is we should be stricter if you're dealing with de'oraisas because it's a de'oraisa. The other approach was you should be stricter with the de'rabanans because if you're dealing with the de'rabanan, then we gave two reasons. Number one, if you deal with the de'rabanan, people are less likely to take it seriously. But I think there was a second reason also. Well, you said that. But it may tie into that in terms of what you're going to be doing at home with it. So, our Mishnah said, again, let me just make sure, because we've run through a lot of stuff already, and there's still more that I wanted to discuss here. But let me just make sure we know what we're talking about so far. We had the story of Rav Papa with the oatmeal. Rav Papa / Rav Papi with the oatmeal. And him not trusting the kashrus in Shmuel's house. We noted from the Ritva 3 points on that. On that issue of the not trusting what's going on in the household. Number one, we said that technically he could have used it, because even if it's being done b'mezid, he should still be able to use it. But he chose not to. Chetkes kashrus is spoiled by the fact that they are avadim, not by the fact that he saw evidence of impropriety, by the fact that it looked fresh and new and so on. And number three, that Shmuel himself could use such avadim because he knew them to be okay. But that doesn't help Rav Papa. That was our opening point. Second, we looked at the issue of Borer on Yom Tov and said technically it is fine, although it has to be done in a way that will not involve Tircha, and also Beis Hillel didn't want me to use large amounts, looking like I'm preparing for tomorrow, with the clarification of Rabbi Gamliel's position. And then we saw sending food on Yom Tov, and we want to make sure that there's no strain for the sender, no strain for the recipient. And we saw the Machlokas, Beis Hillel, and Beis Shammai. And then we had this business of the raw grain and the concern about sending it, which is a concern, according to Rashi, that it's not for use today. It's really going to be used for after today because you can't grind it up today. The Sfasemes, the concern is that it's really only going to be used afterwards because that's what people do. And the Bala Iter, that it's animal food. And that's the Machlokas, is am I allowed to prepare it for animals?
But going back to Alan's question, the Mishmar Kuli sells, the problem is Mishum Halachasa. Its transport will lead people to believe.
Yeah.
Right?
So I don't understand what you're saying.
No. But he asked the question, well, if you have tefillah lying around in your house, what do you do with it? The issue we're talking about here is bringing a gift, essentially.
Right.
With respect to the tefillah. Not whether you...
Right, no, that's true.
Right?
Right, no, that's true. The, right. Alan's question falls apart. The question, right, the issue here of appearances was because you are bringing it there.
Somebody's in the street.
Right. That's a good point. Okay. All right. Let's see a little bit about this delivery of the gifts. Tani Rav Yechiel. So Rav Yechiel taught the following. Ubilvad shlo yasenu b'shura. He said, you can send the gift, like we've said, but you can't send them in a row. And what he means with a row is a parade. Yeah, no parade. Rashi says, shlo yasenu b'shura. Lo yishlach hadoron al yidei anashim harbe. You shouldn't send it with a lot of people. Da'av shamilsa is a phrase we use in the Gemara to say it makes a tumult, it makes a lot of noise, people will all find out. And it looks like you bring it to market. So can you define parade? Tana, ein shura p'chusa mishlosha b'nei adam. The Gemara says, shura means no fewer than three people. And then, boy, Ravashi, t'plasa garbi, t'plasa mini mai. Take, Ravashi says, okay. You can't make a row of three people to deliver it. That I understand. However, what if it's three different species of food and each one is being delivered by a different person? My problem is three people bringing one thing. That looks like you're all hauling it to market. But if three people have three different items...
They're independent.
Right, so maybe that's not such an issue. So his answer is, take them. So what's going on here? What is our point? So first of all, the answer with three is, in general, three, again, is this causes this great commotion. The Beis Yosef on this quotes the Ran, who quotes Rabbeinu Ephraim, one of the authors of the Tosfos, that the issue is that if you have three people, it looks like one is the seller, one is the buyer, and one is the middleman. That's why three is a concern. It looks like you have your parties to a transaction engaged in this process. Whereas three people with three different species, so they're not, you know, that shows they're not all engaged in the same transaction.
We have three with the bima for like mountain and lane. Is that three also similar concept?
Well, not if I take the Beis Yosef's approach. If I say three in general is publicity, then yes. Yeah. And you have a basis for that. We say that in Hilchos Lashon Hara. Right, and chavra islay, and so on. We have all sorts of applications where three does indicate promotion, but the Beis Yosef takes it as three in a commercial context specifically.
Isn't that a good expression? Two's company and three's a crowd.
Yes, so there you go. This is where it comes from. Right. So the Gemara asks, what about if it's three different species? Because Rashi says, you know, if it's three different things that are being brought, you could have legitimately sent them separately. You send one with one person, then send one with another person later. And so what's the big deal? The fact that they're all together? So the Gemara says, Teku. So I wanted to make sure to see this point, because I thought this was very interesting. Take a look at source Zion. The Rambam writes, Kol davar shemutar l'shalcho b'yom tov. Anything you're allowed to send on Yom Tov, perhaps as opposed to Tavua or whatever, but anything you're allowed to send on Yom Tov, kishi yishalchenu l'chaveiro tishura, when you send it to somebody else as a gift, lo yishalchenu b'shura, don't send it in a row of people. Vein shura b'chosa mishlosha b'nei adam, no fewer than three. So the Rambam says, Ketzad, what does that mean? You send animals, you send wine with three or four people, one after the other, and they're all in the room. It's asur. You can't do it the way you would do it during the week. Mutter. That is the question.
Always or only the right? Only in the rises.
So the Rambam just first. The Rambam says mutter. The Rambam doesn't say teiku. The Rambam says mutter. So the Magid Mishnah on this Rambam asks. He says, "What are you doing? Teiku? Indeed, we are supposed to be machmir with it." So he says, "No, this is the Rabbanan." Since the issue is a Derabbanan, I don't know how to rule. It's a down on a Derabbanan, and therefore I can do this. And the Ritva says the same thing. But here's the interesting thing. The Ran on this notes that the Rif omitted this discussion. The Rif didn't mention the discussion. And the Ran understands
this
from this piece about three different people.
Three different,
yeah, he omitted the question about three different people. He has the general discussion.
But not the...
Correct. Which he understands...
What kind of shura?
Three people together.
Side by side? Or one after another? Rambam seems to say one after another. What's a shura? Shura is generally a row of three...
Well, that's the Gemara's wording. Rambam didn't change anything to the wording. But it's true that he writes here, Ze'achar Ze'ah.
Right.
Which manifests that it's a row.
Right.
Correct. Which, if I take the view that the concern is it looks like a go in a market, I understand.
Three guys.
I would say three like this. Yeah. But yeah.
But if it's three together like that, it would be
expensive. Well,
it might be
locked off.
Three guys walking next to each other, checking out the entire street, it's okay.
Yeah. That may be so. This may be the way you went to market.
Yeah, well, the Rambam said, that's okay. Well, it sounds like he says, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's Zerach HaZeh, that's the problem.
So it appears.
High Piper is the issue.
Yeah, no, so it appears. But the Ran says, look, the Rif quoted the Gemara about not bringing it in a row. The Rif did not quote the question of, what if it's three people with three different species? Therefore, the Rif must be strict. So he says the Rif is strict on this issue, which raises a question then. If the Rambam is lenient because Safik Derabbanan, why wasn't the Rif lenient because of Safik Derabbanan? Not to mention, it's odd that the Rif would rule one way and the Rambam would rule the other way. The Rambam is very often in line with the Rif. The Rif, remember, is his father's Rebbe. So what is this? Why is the Rambam, why is the Rif saying Usr? So
why didn't he make the conclusion because the Rif is silent, he would hold its
because
Usr?
Because right before you get to this question, mm-hmm. you just said all rows are off limits. Rows
right.
of three are off limits.
Right.
The question was maybe we should permit a row of three if they're carrying three
different
species.
Things.
But he didn't even raise the question,
right.
which indicates that he just says flat
when
Usr.
When the Rif quotes the Gemara, he uses the same lashon. He doesn't talk that they're carrying. He doesn't say that they're carrying a separate.
Here, Ayin Shom. It is. Article will not have it now. It's on Zayin Amud Aleph. The middle of the page, and here's the quote from the Rif. He says, "Tani Rav Yechiel, ubilvad shlo yaseh kishura. Tana, ein shura pchusa mishlosha b'nei adam."
Zeh.
Yeah. So it's you can look at it. You'll see it's no different. So by not raising the question of the exemption,
means everything would be awesome.
Yeah. So take a look what the Amshel Shlomo says in Source Ches. The Amshel Shlomo says, you know why? Haran kasa v'zelashono. The Ran wrote, Avol Bahag pasag l'chomer, that the Bahag, the earliest of our codes of law, was strict. It's not really a code, but alright. And he says so, or Vachinira das Rif, so appears to be the Rif's view, Sheish Mitah, because he left it out. Vitsarach even Lama. And I don't know why, I have to examine why. That's the Ram. And he says, Vani Omer, so the Yamshal Shlomo, the Maharshal, Rav Shlomo Luria, says, I say, Ilo Hava Nivshita Azlinon Lakula. He says, the answer is that Rav Ashi and his generation left it as a teku. That means they felt it might indeed be asur. Unlike the logic we're bringing for the Rambam, that if you leave it in doubt, it's a safek derabanan. Rav Ashi and his Dor, by recording this and not resolving it, are saying, we don't know that this is permissible. And therefore, they're saying, you should say, leave it as Osir.
And the Rambam,
so it appears. The Sfas-Emes disagrees. Take a look at that test.
Are there two categories when it comes to take, or three? In other words, are rabbanons that are connected to the rices, or pure rabbanons? When we say generally the take,
you ask me a question about take, you ask me about something like rabbanon.
Well, right. When we say something's a rabbanon, are there two categories of rabbanons that influence teku? The conclusion on teku according to the Rambam, or it wouldn't matter. In other words, is it? Because we have rabbanons that are like the rice, we have the rabbanons that are offshoots of the rice, and
right.
we're
more makil on the rabbanons that stand in a vacuum.
Right,
that is true, but I'm not sure why that would relate here, where your rabbanon that you're talking about.
Maybe there's a machlekes in take who's the rabbanon that some take who's the rabbanon would be machmir, some take who's the rabbanon would be.
Maybe I like what the Sfas Emes does with it. Take a look. He says, "Ve'ein zehech reya." The Yesh Lomar disasmu adaber b'safek k'day lahakel v'derabanan shelo yavo acher limtza raya lifshot ha'ivaya me'ezeh b'risa l'kach sasmu b'teku. He says, "I don't like the Amshel Shlomo's argument that if they said if Rav Ashi's generation left it as teku, it must mean usur." He says, I don't buy that, because you could say that they left the thing as suffix in order to tell people to be lenient, because after all, it's a derabanan. They lest somebody else come along and say, I think it should be asur. I have a source from some brisa to say asur. We're telling you no. Lachein sasmu b'teku. We're leaving it as a teku to say is mutter. In other words, teku doesn't have to be a message of we think you can't do this. It could just easily be a message saying we think you can do this. I'm not obligated to read it your way. And he says, in fact, Kemoshe Kasa Bayam Shel Shlomo Gufei Babakama. He says the Marshal himself said that. Sorry?
It's a provocative thought. So it's mutter until Eliyahu comes and let him decide it's us.
As far That's as exactly concerned. What he's saying. Well, not it's mutter,
I like
but
it.
We
I
don't
like
know. He's saying we don't know whether usur or mutter, since it's suffik on a derabanan, we're going to say mutter. But the reason for saying it, for putting it in the Gemara and writing teku, is to keep somebody else from coming along and saying, I have a reason why it should be usur. You can't do that because we already put teku on it.
A dasi yachid comes along and says, machmir.
We're talking about appearance of commerce. So what were they debating?
What do you mean?
This whole reason of three, not two, is because it looks like commerce.
Yes.
We're afraid someone's going to come to the wrong conclusion. So it either looks like commerce when you're carrying different items or you don't.
Not according to Rashi. Rashi is just it's very noisy in it. And it's not necessarily like commerce.
I didn't think Rashi was avoiding the commerce. No, Rashi says it. Nirin kemolich and limkor
b'shuk.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe
the Machlokes is that that's such a fine distinction that some people are not going to understand that it is Machlokes and Mishnah or not.
But the problem is that Rav Ashi said teku. You should have rules for that telling you what to do when Rav Ashi says teku.
We should have a lot of rules when not.
It shouldn't come down to a debate between the Rambam and the Riv about whether this looks like commerce or not. The Rav Ashi paskin teku, I just don't know what that means. So the Sfas Emes says, you want to know what teku is? Teku is a statement of don't try to resolve this debate.
Either way.
Yeah, either way.
Right.
I believe it's mutter because it's something I got to do. And I don't want you coming along in some later generation to say, well, I can prove that it should be Usser. Alan, you look like you're...
So just say it's Mutter.
See, this is what I wanted to get to. Just say it's a weird idea, no?
Just say it's Mutter. We wouldn't have a conversation. Just say Mutter, like the Rambam. We wouldn't have a whole conversation.
Well, because he doesn't necessarily think it's Mutter. He thinks it's something.
But a local Lamaise, he would permit it.
Well, the question that you have to ask first is this really what a Teiku does? Is a Teiku an argument closer? Is a Teiku a statement that... you can't say anything about this discussion anymore because we called it. Is Teiku, the equivalent of no backsies? Like, that's it. We've ruled. You can't go any further with this. Just leave it there. Is that what this is? So look at what the Sfasemes does. In the brackets, he says, I have news for you. Not only do I think that's what they're doing, but you think that's what they're doing. He talks to the Yamshel Shlomo, to the Marishal. He says, I saw that idea. That's not my own idea. The Yamshel Shlomo said it. Kamosha Kasav, it's in the brackets on the second line. Kamosha Kasav, Yamshel Shlomo, Gufei Bavakama, De Osa Na'ivayo Shalom Nivshitu. That in cases where you have a question that isn't resolved, even if a chacham in our generation would say, ah, I have a proof, we would listen to him normally. Unless they say teiku, then ain rishus l'shum go'om l'poshta. Once they say teiku, you're not allowed to get involved. He says the Yamshel Shlomo believes that. So therefore, why are you reading their teiku as a message that is usur? Read their teiku as a message that it's mutter, and we're simply closing the discussion at this stage. Lachin nira. So he says, I'll tell you what I think is going on. I'll tell you why the riff didn't say anything. He says, Lachin nira, dizeh, and when he says zeh, I end in those bracketed words, havas haminin bishura. This practice of bringing the different species in a row and so on, havi kilachatchila. He says it's like a lechatchila. What he means is, what it looks like you're doing is violating Yantiv in a way that you don't need to violate it. Why do you need to send three species with three people all together? So even if it's a derabanan, keben diacholam lasas beheter. He says, since they can do it in a mutter way, ein lahakel misveka, don't be lenient in a case of doubt. Kamosha kaswa poskim, wait, Gerard, read in the brackets. He says the poskim say the ein osin sveka derabanan lachatchila. Even though we say that when you're in doubt on a derabanan, it's mutter, that doesn't mean go ahead and do it. That means if you're stuck, so you can do it. But that's not an ideal. That's not what you're supposed to be doing, you know? It's sort of like, well, this is not really a good analogy, but when we say that if you don't know what bracha to make on something, so you say shahakol. That's not ideal. What you're supposed to do is find out what it is. You're in a situation where you can't, so it's to say shahakol.
So it sounds like even technically the bracha is like the Rambam, it's mutter. But why do something so you're so when the Bahag was machmer, he passed the chumra, don't get chila do it.
Yeah.
Which is like, and if someone did it already, then you wouldn't necessarily chastise.
So that's what he's saying, he thinks the story, the riff is...
He thinks the Rambam is right. Yeah. The Rambam is right, it's mutter. Because Teiku leaves it in doubt on a derabanan, and they left it but Teiku to say, don't mess with this. We leave it as, I don't know what to do with derabanan, it should be mutter. However, the riff is saying, what for? Why do it? Just send them separately. You don't need to create a parade. Yeah, it's not like, I could answer, well, there may be a case in which you do need to. Well, you don't know where they're going.
They go separate. It's dangerous. Or
it's more covered.
Come up with a reason.
Come on. Sometimes they're having three people.
No. It's more covered if they're separate.
So there's less innocent saying that's...
maybe. Sorry.
So less innocent saying then that's his interpretation of...
Yes.
And basically the riff agrees with it.
Yep.
Basically,
so well, he says no. He says everybody agrees on what a teiku is.
Yeah. The riff is the raya.
It's strange. But Bahag says it's usur. He says pasuk l'chumra, which means.
Well, I don't have the Bahag. I didn't look in the Bahag. It may not even be a part of the Bahag that we have.
But the Yamshel Shlomo pasuk. Yeah, well, you have to look at the Bahag exactly how he comes to that conclusion.
Or if he just says it's Osir, it's entirely possible he just says Osir. But yes, that's his explanation. That's what we have three lines to hit the Mishnah and finish the discussion. Rabbi Shimon Matir B'Tavua. Rabbi Shimon permitted sending grain. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Matir B'Tavua could go nechitin lasas man ludios. He permits you to send grain like sending wheat because you can make ludios with it. Rashi just says it's a wheat food. Sa'orim litin lefne behemto, barley for the animal, and that goes back to our point about animal food. Adashim lasas man resisin, or lentils to make resisin, which Rashi again very helpfully tells you is food made from lentils. Honestly, I don't know what he was doing. But the point here is that Rabbi Shimon says there are things that you can do with the tavua, and therefore it is mutter. So that was that last key point that I wanted to see, was this teiku point, which I think is a fascinating thing. Yeah. Think about why they're doing what the Gemara is thinking when it inserts a teiku. So God willing, in 2 weeks, Rabbi Ziering or I will pick up with this Mishnah. There are fantastic things to see in this Mishnah having nothing to do with Yontif.